It's 9 a.m. Mountain Time. It is Thursday. It's September 17th. And this is Tom and Shane on the air, our daily podcast. And of course, we're here live every weekday at 9 a.m. Mountain Time. We hope you'll join us each time we're here. Also, of course, we're on the radio too. We'll be on the radio Saturday, 8 to 11, with limited commercial interruption. So you can hear us there at KMMSAM.com. And if you're watching us on YouTube, of course, we're simulcasting on YouTube today at the same time we're on Facebook, by the way. So if you're watching us on YouTube right now, please subscribe, like us, comment, and leave your stuff and whatever. And of course, you can watch our past shows. Those are all at KMMSAM.com. Click on Tom and Shane's podcast over there, and you will be taken to them. And we welcome Mike McCormick today to the show. Tom and Shane, of course, are here, and hey, we're ready to rock and roll. So, Mike, I guess the big deal, of course, is interest rates. Fed promises to keep them low, and boy, the 30-year mortgage, 2.87 as of this morning, I saw on the news. So what do you think about the what's the Fed up to? They say they're not going to raise rates till 2023.
Well, thanks for having me, Tom. It is a pleasure to be here with you guys, and thanks for tuning in. We appreciate your questions. And of course, my disclaimer real briefly,
right?
Anything I say that causes you to make money, it's not my credit. Anything that I say that causes you to lose money, it's not my fault. But you can always feel free to reach out to me directly, find me on the web if you want to talk in person. This is general news, trying to get some clarity about what the heck is going on these days. And the Federal Reserve came out yesterday, not too far away from their Jackson Hole meeting, so really not a lot of news. And I got to tell you, it was a lot like, you know, in Forrest Gump, where he's running across the country and he turns around and runs back and he turns around and runs back. And he's got all those people following him. And you know, at one point he stops and people are waiting for some sort of sage wisdom, some fantastic insight that they've been following this guru for so long. And he says, I'm tired, I'm going home. And that was kind of like the news yesterday. We tried to make some reaction about it. The market had a sell-off. It's recovering right now. But basically, they just said, we're going to keep doing the same thing. We're going to do what we said. And there's really nothing to see here. They're going to keep interest rates near zero for 2 to 3 years. They're going to keep some of their asset purchases in place. And they didn't announce any new actions. They didn't announce any new things that might manipulate the stock market to support it. They're already doing incredible things to support it. And they reiterated their language that they would like to see inflation come up above 2% so that inflation would average 2%. And we have not seen 2% inflation in a while. And so, of course, in order to get an average means that we need to see something above it for a while. So what does this mean? You know, it means that when you see a sell-off in the stock market, you should buy the dip. This is about as straightforward as it could be. I'm not saying that there's not a lot of risk in the market. I'm not saying that things are overvalued. I'm not saying that the election isn't playing into things, or China, or whatever your concern might be. But if you are an investor, keep making contributions to your IRA. Keep buying stocks, because bonds won't make you back. They won't make you the money. Despite it all, of course, we're seeing bonds rally today, and we're seeing, you know, some sort of moving of asset classes around. We're coming up to a quarter end. We'll see where it goes. But the interesting story is there's really nowhere else to put your money except for the stock market and real estate. That's really the basic right there.
Yeah.
Show's over.
Real estate has really gone up here lately.
Real estate has. Now, you got to pull out a few features of it. And this is where it's tricky to be a passive investor in real estate. And I do plenty of it, meaning I don't want to own a rental property. You know, I'd like, if I owned a lot of rental properties, I'd probably sell them because they'd be worth a bunch. But I have owned rental properties and it's a pain. It's a pain. I chose not to pay the 7 to 10% for a property management company to watch my asset for me, which meant that I was dealing with deadbeat renters, clogged toilets, neglected landscaping. Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why rentals make money is because there's work that has to happen for it. So we do offer ways that you can invest in real estate through the stock market and get ownership, usually of big properties. And these days, big properties actually might include things like shopping malls and office buildings. And those are a bit dicey right now, you might say, hey?
Yeah. Shane, where's the market going? Or where are the Feds going, I should say?
Well, I think that one of the most important reactions with regards to the Fed's announcement yesterday is China. China, as we announced back in April, was implementing a digital currency. They removed currency from the streets in April. And this week now they've moved to the second phase of that. And now digital currency will cover everybody's monthly bills as well. So everything that's done in urban China is by phone and directly with your bank. There's a small amount of currency left in the countryside, but of course they're trying to move people in the rural areas to cellular access so they can move away completely from any kind of or form of currency. It's an interesting aspect because of the currency market. In doing so, you know, the value of the new yuan, as they say it, has now dropped, and it's down to where is it? 6.76. So, you know, it's moving away from the market's valuation of seven yuan to the U.S. dollar, and you know, that makes a big change. The euro's up to 118, pound sterling 129. So, one of the interesting aspects of what we talk about all the time, which is what, you know, where do you trade? And you know, the biggest swings percentage for leverage is still in the currency market. The commodity market is holding steady and not impacting the market as much. So, because oil and in Europe and in the United States is still holding over $40.92 West Texas, $43.15 in Europe. But my concern again, here we go. Natural gas has fallen 78 cents to just over $2, $2 and a penny. Got to see that maintain that $2 mark for any of the natural gas fracking to have any valuation for people in the United States. So it's a bit of a cluster trade, and Mikey's right. I mean, as you mentioned, the 30-year bond right now today after the announcement is 1.42. And so there's no money in that as an investment other than to secure a large amount of money, which of course we've always talked about, because you know, all but $6 trillion of your debt's held in the U.S. So we march along our merry way. Your debt now is at 26.7 trillion. Interesting when you look at what's happened in the last 9 months and the funding that the U.S. government's created. You know, when he started with his presidency, I'm sure you remember, Tom, was 22 trillion, right? So
yeah, mm-hmm.
You know, it's coming up on 5 trillion increase, but you know, that's a 20% increase. That's not bad considering what he's had to deal with in the last 9 months.
Well, I was gonna say, you know, we just pulled $3 trillion out of nowhere. What's the problem, Mikey? One of the things we talked about yesterday, the prediction for the global recovery, they were thinking, you know, it was they're thinking it might be as high as 5% next year. Have you heard anything on the recovery? What we can expect from that?
Oh, you know, in terms of GDP numbers, you know, obviously we're 30% off flatlining, and that recovery is going to take a while, and it's going to take a while because we've got major sectors that we don't see a light at the end of the tunnel, meaning aerospace, I was listening to some more job cuts happening from some industrials today. And so is that going to be reflected in the stock market? You know, maybe, maybe the Dow Industrials is trailing the S&P. That's been happening for a while because there aren't technology, there aren't enough tech weighted companies in the Dow. And so I think that we're talking about two different things. I think that the haves will continue to prosper. If you have a home, if you have a stock portfolio, and if you have an income paying job, I think the have nots will be in for some tough sailing. I don't see much in the way of wage appreciation happening. And it's going to get harder to make money if you don't have specialized skills.
Shane, you just mentioned the commodity or the currency market. How will that reflect the recovery in Europe or wherever?
Well, the importance of it is of course trade, and you know the development of new trade routes around the world. Number one, number two, it's a reflection of confidence, in particularly with regards to pound sterling in Europe. You know, there's going to be this ongoing battle, basically, with Europe trying to sustain itself and remain a trading bloc. You know, with Brexit, you know, a lot of people, including myself, I expected by this time that other countries may have wanted to decide, may have wanted to exit, but they seem to be holding themselves strong. So as a trading bloc, Europe and the UK want to do a deal with the United States. Having their currencies at the level they're at now makes it pretty interesting. I'm sure that your administration would like to see more of a par value. But right this moment, it makes American products cheaper, right? So I guess
that's a good thing.
It's a good thing, and as long as capital is flowing to the U.S. as fast as it is, and it's still continuing, you're going to see Trump make demands, more demands of any trade agreements that if you're going to sell in America, you have to build in America. That will be his foreign, you know, policy objective in his second term. Is that, you know, if you're not going to build here, you can't sell here. So there you go.
Yeah, that'd be true. All right. Well, the other thing we wanted to talk about is Snowflake. Snowflake stock can double from current values if the cloud data platform outshines top rival Oracle. So, Mike, what do you think on Snowflake? Well, first of all, we should probably explain what Snowflake is.
Yeah,
for the people who don't know, you can handle that.
That's right. Snowflake is a cloud-based data warehousing startup like Oracle and all the other platforms, you know, having cloud access. And was started in 2012, 8 years ago, raising $1.4 billion in venture capital. And it's, of course, based in Santa Mateo, California. Its chairman and major shareholder is Bob Muglia, and who's now a billionaire after yesterday, the largest IPO in history, or certainly in price value, which was remarkable to watch. And of course, with the valuation came results of staggering numbers. I mean, 2019 revenue for the company was $264.7 million, up 174% from 2018. So it's a dynamic area of the market. I probably would look at someone ending up buying it if they can. I mean, you know, if the government will let them. One of the reasons you'll see the remarkable price on the stock, which is around 253 today, is there's only 36.8 million shares out on it. excuse me, which bodes well for, you know, the venture capitalists that invested in it over the last 12 years, because now that it's, you know, most of those people bought stock early, bought it cheap, and they've held it for more than 2 years. So now all their positions are free trading. And, you know, it's amazing. Number one investor is Andreessen Horowitz of Menlo Park, California. Coastal Adventures, Menlo Park, California, Angel, SV Angel, Palo Alto, California, and several others. Now, I'm only mentioning this because for our listeners, it's important that you know that your government has prevented you from having any right to invest in these companies at early stages. And that's just downright wrong. And if you wanted to see a shift in the market to the advantage of the investor, you know, the SEC and the Republicans should change these laws. As you know, the Capone law came in back in the 90s. That was basically states that unless you have $1 million in assets, not including your home, you can't buy a penny stock, or you can't invest in as a venture capitalist in a small startup. So these are the kinds of things that we've talked about over the years that should change, because too few people are making too much money on all these IPOs. And it's a very, very, very sad thing. An IPO is an initial public offering, most often by a private company that's at least 2 to 4 years old. It's very interesting because there's an anticipated 2020 IPO still before the end of the year. Airbnb, Robinhood, Postmates, and, you know, different type of delivery companies for food and so forth. So we'll see how this continues. But 2020 has been a huge year for IPOs because, as we've said, there's nothing else to buy.
Yeah. Mike, what do you think of Snowflake? You going to put all your folks in it, or I know you can't really say that on the air, but
yeah. You know, to Shane's point about IPOs, first of all, to get involved in an IPO, you should be a large client of a large wirehouse, which means somebody that's involved in the underwriting of these IPOs, typically Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, depending on where you are, somebody like that. And so if you're a big client of one of those wirehouses, you know, you're paying them a lot of fees. They're happy to take those. And that's the way you invest, and that's fine. Now, if you want to get in on an IPO and you're not a large investor with one of those wirehouses, know that you're getting secondhand news, secondhand pricing, and you've got more disadvantages available to you. And thirdly, the track record for IPOs in general for the past 2 years has been a loss. And so we hear about these winners just like we hear about those people that win the lotteries. We don't hear a lot about the people that don't win the lottery, and there's a lot more of them. And then to Shane's point about investing in private companies, I do believe that investing in private companies is a wise choice. Everybody I know that's rich made their money by investing privately in a company or privately in real estate. What I do for my clients is I help preserve that wealth in a tax efficient and liquid manner and grow it. And just be careful, because these rules that exist to keep you from investing in private companies are designed to protect you. And if you feel that they're unfair, recognize that that may be true, but there's always a way to get in. So if you've got more questions about investing in private companies, there's a few people in town that are doing great work facilitating that. You still need to be an accredited investor. But if you have questions, I can put you in touch with some people that might have a good place for your dollars.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Well, the other things we've got to talk about, the jobless claims. Shane, do you by any chance have your speakers on? Because when I
on my screen that you unmuted me, so I think I'm okay.
Yeah, no, I muted you because we were getting feedback, and I muted you to see which one of us is doing the feedback. And if your speakers are on your computer, you need to mute those. Just saying so, because we were getting
no feedback. I'm good. Okay.
All right. The jobless, we're looking at 860,000 amid signs of economic recovery. They were looking for 850,000. What are you hearing, Mike, because you have investors around the country? Are there industries that are starting to come back? We know restaurants and all of those folks are in real bad trouble. They're talking about, you know, not coming back. So, what are you hearing from what are your investors saying? Is where do we put the money? What industries look like they're going to weather this and come out of it okay?
I think it's probably easier to make a list of those that aren't.
Yeah, probably.
And right now, energy is the real doubtful looking one. We've got Exxon potentially cutting their dividend. That's been a real depressing stock, similar to Ford and GE of the past, where it just seems like they can't do anything right. And now it's unclear on how they're actually going to start doing things right. And Exxon's a company that was on the Dow for 98 years. All of foreign policy, I believe, was developed around them, and of course Standard Oil. And now we've had a paradigm shift in that use. And I'm not saying we're not using oil. This is a show where we know we use oil. But the demand for it has changed, and commodities are very sensitive to small changes in demand. And the economic growth that we're seeing right now is not in the form of transport. It's not necessarily in the form of manufacturing. It's primarily around technology. It's children sitting at home all day long in front of computers. It's people right now watching this in their pajamas and using earbuds and using technology and IPOs like Snowflake, apps like Zoom. There's learning management software companies like Canvas that's just privately held, but that's what our school district's using. So the dollars and the economic activity are still happening. We're still eating food. We're still having entertainment. We're still having interactions. We're just having it in different ways. And I do think that there's great opportunity out there, but careful about, we've already hit upon the big black eyes, and there's no secret about it. It's any kind of real estate that involves people living together closely, bad. It's anything that has to do with using oil. Right now, we've got a lot of it, so that's kind of bad. Natural gas, we touched on that one. And also when you're looking at just basically old school travel, old school entertainment, unfortunately, we've got several music venues that have done great work here in town, and I don't see a light at the end of the tunnel for them. Pharma, healthcare, that is probably a really good value play. It's tied up in politics. It's tied up in FDA. It's tied up in all these things that are so difficult to predict. But if you're an asset allocator like we are, we think that healthcare is here to stay. The basic mantra of this show that I've been purporting since Tom got me on, oh gosh, Tom, I don't know, it's been 8 years or something.
At least, yeah.
Is that there's three sectors that we're going to see growth in that are going to define our lives. And they've really played out to be true. Healthcare is one of them. The world's aging, and we're going to spend all our money on staying alive and enjoying our lives. Second one is technology. That has, of course, been the story. That's not a big secret there. And then the last one is emerging markets. And I want you to know that the China ETF has outpaced the S&P for 2 years. The China ETF is doing just fine. So even with our loggerheads with trade, we need to talk about the TikTok thing on this show. Mm-hmm. We're seeing that you can make money in emerging markets as other economies are developing their own economies as well. So where do you stay away from? You kind of stay away from, you know, it's out with the old, in with the new. And that makes it difficult for a lot of people the father gave you Exxon stock and said, never sell Exxon. And I have clients that's still ringing around in their head. Even now they've got huge taxable gains in it. And there's things we can do. There's things that we are doing. You can sell it and you can buy. Of course, we're a fan of funds, which would be baskets. But you can buy other things and realize some tax advantages and still keep your exposure going at the same way.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Let me get us all back up here. Sorry.
This is advanced technology.
I know. There's so many buttons to press here. I know. What are we doing? Well, let's talk about TikTok since you brought it up. Oracle is the looks like they're the big dog in the meat house, or the tallest midget in the room, whatever you want to say. And Trump still has to okay this, according to him, anyway. So I don't know.
Okay, so there's a lot going on in this one. Yeah. And TikTok, for those that haven't tuned in, is primarily used by kids posting videos of them dancing and being silly. And it's incredibly successful. And it, of course, has value the same way that any social media company has value, where they can collect data on what people like, and they can use that data to target advertisements or other maybe more nefarious activities that also could be monetized. The concern is that it's a Chinese company, and the concern would be that the data for Americans is being housed over in a foreign country that right now we're not super keen on, and their government could theoretically request the data and use it to our detriment. And so that concern is an interesting one and perhaps valid. I'm not sure why we don't have those same concerns over other countries and where we store our data. I think it's the beginning of a really good discussion. There's to date has been no instance of TikTok sharing their data with the Chinese government or being requested to, allegedly. Again, I'm just reporting on the news that I read. These days, you can find a story to support whatever argument you want to make. And what's interesting now is that we've got a situation where a government entity has said, you need to sell this company subject to our approval. And both governments, China included, now have said, okay, well, we need to approve that also. What's come out of it is at first it was Microsoft. Boom. Microsoft was getting what they thought was a fair price. They're going to get a great entry in the social media market. They were feeling pretty good about this deal. Now, all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, Trump did put a 45-day timeline on something that's pretty complicated and effectively brand new, right? This is a brand new idea. One country telling another country they need to sell part of one privately held company, theoretically, even though it's a communist country, and they need to sell it to us, or we're just going to block it from its main revenue driver, which would be us. Oracle is a boring back office company. Boring, boring, boring. They managed to help drive up the price. They also now are being called a partner, not a purchaser. So the nature of the deal is completely changed, and that this is not an outright sale. This is going to be basically a second set of eyes on what happens to US TikTok data through allowing Oracle to have access into that. Oracle is primarily interested, as with every company buying it, they're interested in two things: the data that they could mine, but also it's the algorithm. It's the algorithm, the same idea that drives Google searches. This is what the value of these companies is in the back office end of things. And that's what Oracle is interested in. They're a back office database company. They want to get the algorithm. TikTok's going to be really reluctant to share that part of it. Like I said, I think that this is going to be a partnership. It's unclear if any dollars are changing hands. It's unclear of what ownership is changing hands. Trump is in a really delicate position, because if he's seen as shutting down TikTok to try and enforce his mandate, that will turn a lot of people off. This group of people historically doesn't vote very much, might not have as many consequences. We're going to watch him try and pull a win out of this one. It might be best just to kick it down the road, because it's opportunity for success is looking doubtful in my mind right now in terms of a clean sale of that entity to a U.S. company.
All right. Shane, what do you think?
Well, there's three points that have to be made here. Number one, Mike is absolutely right with his context of what the project or the deal is, but the reasons behind it. First is, of course, information. Oracle's come in, as was Microsoft, that you know, asked to, you know, by the administration for one reason. The word is servers. They want the servers to filter American information. They don't want it stored in China. That's the big problem right now. The servers for TikTok in China are fully accessed by the Nazi regime there, and the American government's right in wanting to prevent Americans being, you know, involved in any of that. Number two, the foreign policy of this administration in the second term, as I said this last week, is going to be not just to filter, but to segregate companies, particularly public companies, from the U.S. market. And this is a first step. It's sort of like, let's see how we do this 1.1. You know, I don't need to remind everyone on Tuesday, whatever it was, they were at the White House signing a peace treaty first one in 25 years that 4 years ago would have caused World War III, and moving the capital to Jerusalem would blow up the Middle East, and Trump couldn't do it, and Jared Kushner doesn't know what he's doing. He's got no foreign experience. Well, they came up with a new way to do it, a completely different new way to do it, and they stopped funding $750 million a year to the Palestinians as well. So this is a similar issue that no one wants to look at in a way that Trump sees the 21st century. The 21st century is going to have to deal with this participation of all governments in public companies, because if they can't, or if federal governments can't get their legislators to tax them, they're going to have to figure out some other way to participate in the success for the benefit of the taxpayer and the debt, the sovereign debt that governments are dealing with. Now, my third point would be that it's a political win for him, because Wall Street's funding the Democratic Party. They always have. Don't ask me why. I've got reasons to would tell you why. But the bottom line here is that China is, again, you know, it's a three-prong effort on the part of the Chinese. Trade, create their own internal market of consumption, and then steal anything they can to advance ahead of anyone else in the world. They're not going to fire a shot. They're not going to use their navy. They're not going to fly a plane anywhere, with the exception of maybe Taiwan. So, yeah, overall, I think it's a great idea. And I think it's brilliant that Trump is saying, when we do this deal, we want a piece of it. You know, the U.S. Treasury deserves a piece of it. It's our country. You know, you're allowed to trade here. You're allowed to ask our investors to invest in your company. So we want a piece of the action. Shouldn't, you know, everyone says, oh, that's a terrible thing. You can't do that. Well, everything your president's done for the last 4 years has been told by the media, by the press, by the banks, by everybody. Can't do that. It's a terrible thing. It's the 21st century. You got to change the game everywhere on the board.
All right.
I like that. And I don't fundamentally disagree, but we do have governments getting involved in capitalism. And that's something that America's been pretty good at not doing. And yes, there's always been some involvement in okaying foreign deals and some controls on it, but it's going to be interesting to watch, because if the tables were turned, this would be a big outcry from us, and we wouldn't go along with it. So that's one of the things I'm watching for the outcome, is how is this going to be parlayed into still a support of capitalism, as we support our national security, as we recognize that, yes, as you alluded to, this is effectively the new type of, you know, where are you putting your factories, where are you putting your embassies, who are you acknowledging as a sovereign country, et cetera. This is a new game.
Yeah. Bruce says, hi, Mike.
Always like Bruce.
Yeah. Tune in. All right. Craig's going strong this morning. Trump thinks he should get a commission on the sale. Well, I think the U.S. should get a commission on the sale, and it wouldn't go to Trump directly anyway. So that's kind of a moot point. Arms deal, not a peace deal. I want to comment on that real quick.
Very sad that your woke media in your country, instead of an observance of an amazing accomplishment in the Middle East, I mean, he's completely flipped foreign policy in your country of 70 years. And, you know, he went to everyone on the board and he said, okay, let's do a deal. The Palestinians wouldn't listen. We talked about this. He went to Israel and said, make them a deal they can't refuse. They did. So he said, you're off the board. We're throwing you out of the game. And now look what you have. You've got peace in the Middle East. No one would have ever thought that. No one ever said he could get it done. Second, a comment about ExxonMobil. Look, one of the reasons that ExxonMobil and the majors are in such a terrible situation isn't because of their production. They still have some of the largest production in the world. And it isn't the price of oil. What it was is that they didn't participate in creating American oil independence. They were global corporations looking for the white elephant fields that still hadn't been found, because that's all they claimed they could do because of the cost involved in all of it. And they completely missed the game, missed the play. You had the independent producers in the United States develop fracking for oil and gas. And yeah, we can go in to talk about it. Some of it works, some of it doesn't. But the fact is, as a result of those investments by oil independent people in the United States, your country became oil independent. So this was a big deal, because it wasn't just the Arab states selling oil to America, folks. It was the oil majors that were doing it too.
How true. Yeah.
Now they got to find someone else to sell it to, because the shipping costs alone are causing a difference in their profits. And that's important.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike.
I like what you said. I think it's interesting that we can combine them, because the reason why we have peace in the Middle East is because our oil independence has neutered Iran. And we're able to be more aggressive in negotiations over there that we weren't able to do in the past. And that's related. And I think you're right about the big Exxon playbook was, let's find the big giant offshore fields and faraway places instead of just looking at our own backyard. That said, everybody is suffering with these low prices for everybody's in it together. Yes, profits have been made and business jobs have been created in our Bakken and Marcellus shale fields, but it's pain all around there right now. And we'll see how they emerge. There's no industry that's more used to 10 years of no money than the energy business. They're good at that. They know what to do.
Yeah. And the problem too is that want to remind everyone that majors pricing is around $55 a barrel. And fracking oil in the United States is 65, but like I said, you don't have the shipping costs in between, and the oil coming out of the United States is a lot lighter weight oil, so the cost to refine it is far less than, you know, or offshore oil, which is really heavy. The other thing, as Mike pointed out rightly, is Iran's a huge loser, because now the lack of purchase of oil in the Middle East by the U.S. frees all that oil up to the rest of the world. So they don't need Iranian oil. There's now enough oil in the Middle East to run through the Hormuz and out into the oceans of the world in tankers to India, Indonesia, China, you know, all over Eastern Asia that, you know, are now emerging countries. They're no longer third world countries. So here we go. The 21st century is alive and well, and everyone is getting bigger, not just rising higher.
Yeah. Well, I also think, and I'll agree with Craig on this one, that Trump said we should take Iraq's oil. We should have taken Kuwait's oil too. You know, every time somebody gets in trouble, the United States goes over, bails them out at the cost of, you know, blood and treasure. And, you know, we go home empty handed. And I just wonder sometimes if that's a deal or not.
Yeah. And the woke media, I mean, every one of them, all of them. I mean, these guys, like, the mental telepathy, you know, they don't talk about what we just talked about. And we covered it quickly with the treaties and oil. And what did they talk about? Every one of their guys and women on all these shows stood there with a microphone and said, well, this isn't a peace treaty because these people were never at war. I mean, how stupid are you to make a statement like that? I mean, it's like people look at you and go, what did you just say? It's not a peace treaty because they're not at war?
Yeah.
I mean, these people, I like, where do they find them?
Well, we're recognizing each other as sovereign entities. We're, you know, what the UAE and Bahrain said is that we realize that Israel has a right to exist, and you know, we're comfortable with that. And we'll trade with them, and we'll fly our planes back and forth. We'll exchange ambassadors, and hopefully, we can do economic things back and forth. Now, this may be, you know, this could very easily be the tip of the iceberg. You know, if some of these other countries join together, you almost have the Middle East equivalent of the European Union, going against Iran.
Well, that's right. I mean, the United States has all the oil producers in the Middle East by the oranges now. It's great. I mean, they're sitting there going, oh, my gosh, you know, the COVID shuts down everything down. We can't sell oil. The UAE spent billions, hundreds of billions building the Emirate Airlines, which was flying around the world, you know, flying those 400-seat Airbuses with the cone head top. And, you know, in the areas they've been investing now in the last 15 years, they're getting pulled in the shorts. You don't want to see what happened in the 15th century with Spain. Spain was the wealthiest country in the 15th, 16th century because of the gold and silver they took out of, you know, Central America. It's a terrific story to read as an economist, because the country never reinvested in anything. They just spent it building navies and fighting Europeans and wasted, you know, 100 years of wealth. So, you know, these young kids that, you know, from these Arab countries that were all educated in Europe and the United States, you know, they've gone home and they said, we've learned a lot. Like, we got to start paying attention. This happened back in with the euro in 1998. And I sat in my office and watched the shift in ownership of gold, because the requirements were only 15% for anyone to join the EU of gold reserves. And some of these countries had, you know, 40, 50, 60% of gold reserves. And I sat for 2 years in fascination and watched them all sell it away, because all the graduates from MIT and all the economic schools in the West went home. It's a non-performing asset. Why are we holding this? Yeah. And my question every day was watching this was, it's not who's selling it, clearly. Who the hell is buying all of it, right?
He was buying it, yeah.
So it's always a shift. There's always these major economic global shifts. And that's why technology, like Mike says, is so fascinating, because it's so hard to value. And the only predicate to value it is the global population. Facebook, 2 billion people. Well, they say now 20 billion people globally have cell phones. You know, there's 100. What do we got? We got a huge number of people on the planet. I mean, you know,
we do. Yeah.
8 billion people on the planet, and like 25% of them are going to have cell phones. Woohoo!
Yeah. Well, back in May, we talked about Sorrento Therapeutics. Their stock went up 44% after the FDA green lights their antibody that we talked about. They developed an antibody that would not allow the COVID virus to expand or work. And it's been 100% effective. And
yeah, and
so,
it's therapeutic. Keep in mind, this is
it's therapeutic. It's not a vaccine. Yeah. So let's see if I can find some info on that for you. Let's see. Tell you something about works anyway.
You guys know, this is a good example of not chasing these.
These are the guys that led the therapeutic cure for HIV. All right. Mm-hmm. And it's a managed lifestyle now with therapeutics purely. There's no vaccine, never has been. And that's basically what managed and is controlling the spread of HIV. So there you go. We'll see how it works. It's going to be fascinating to see the comparison between vaccines and therapeutics in the next 10 years on these viruses.
Mike?
Oh, I'm just seeing that stock is, it shot up to 600%, went down to a mere double, which is significant. Mm-hmm. And then it's back up to 300% gain. So these tracking these COVID stocks are not for the faint of heart.
No, they're not.
Of course, there's clearly great gains to be made, but this is not, you don't do this with retirement money. You don't do this with safe money. You do this with your gambling money. And good luck on those things. I think we had a really fascinating foreign policy discussion today, and it does tie in with TikTok. It ties in with energy. What if energy was to foreign policy in the past, technology is to foreign policy in the future, and we're watching the shift happen right now before our eyes. it's really a time to be alive, no doubt. And with the Fed behind us and the U.S. still in the dominant position, it's time to be an investor. With the election upon us, I think it's time to have some sideline cash to either make yourself feel better if what happens isn't what you want to have happen, or to take advantage of an opportunity also. And so we're going to see some days where there's going to be some profit taking leading up to it. We're going to see continued hyperbole in terms of the media. The stock market is now pulling back again. It was getting close to even. Now the NASDAQ's down 1.5%. It's one of those times, Tom, you asked me early on about what my clients are thinking and what they're seeing. Mostly they're seeing people with extra money. I think I met the other day my first person that's laid off due to COVID, and I know that has to do with the little bubble that I live in. But mostly people are showing that they have extra money, and they're wondering where to put it, not the opposite, that they are wondering where their next paycheck's coming from, or how they're going to make payroll, or how they're ever going to retire. They're looking at remodeling their house. They're looking at maybe even biting the bullet and buying a rental that barely cash flows. So the real estate boom's likely to continue. We do have a hit to mortgage rates that are coming. They pushed that 50 basis point extra fee for Fannie and Freddie back. That might get squashed. It's never a good time to take that fee on. So we'll see how that one goes.
Yeah. All right.
And finally, I just want to mention once again, this is important. Your national debt, we talk about this. $6.8 trillion is held offshore. The vast majority, clearly, 20 trillion is within your country. But what does that mean? Well, don't forget Social Security. 5.7 trillion of your debt is Social Security. So now you're looking at 12 trillion, and then you have 1.2 trillion held by student debt. So just those alone, you put your debt of your debt over 14 trillion. So you're only looking at like $12 trillion that's basically invested within your country by other methodologies, which we've discussed here. Not a bad number. So when you break down the actual debt of your country into its little pieces, it creates a whole different interpretation of how big that debt really is.
All right. Excellent point. Let's see. Last thing we got to talk about here, guys, because we're getting down to the wire here, is Kodak admits to poor handling of the CEO stock grants. But apparently they found nothing wrong. To bring people up to speed, the CEO of Kodak bought $765 million, or bought a bunch of stock, I should say. I don't know how much he bought. It was a lot.
He bought several hundred thousand shares. Yeah.
Yeah, several hundred thousand dollars. Before this $765 million loan was made, a lot of people thought, this looks a little shaky, because when they got the loan, of course, the stock went up and the guy made some pretty good piece of change. But apparently the SEC says, well, we don't think there's anything wrong here. So anyway, that's kind of where we are. We talked about this a few weeks ago when this happened, but Kodak went up 72%. After the committee found that there was no violation of the law. So I don't know. Still seems a little shady to me. What do you think, Mike?
I think that I think two things. One is there's no such thing as a conspiracy theory, because you can't keep a secret anymore. Yeah. And that's really my most common line that I throw out to people these days is there's no secrets. And so there's really no way to have a good conspiracy theory go on. But it doesn't mean you're not going to get away with something. Yeah. That's what it means. Whatever. We've got great rules on the books. Enforcement of the rules is the part that we can focus on, I think.
Yeah, that'd be true.
So my call was, when this happened, if there was something illegal or the SEC looked at this and the Department of Justice, the process is a 2-year one for an investigation. But the other side of it was that I reminded everyone that Kodak as we all know, was a film company, principally photography. And they had recently sold the last of their assets for $500 million and made an announcement. And I said that if the cover for this was, well, hey, we put out a major announcement already. And so after the announcement, I had every right to buy the stock. So that obviously was what, for this to have come to this conclusion by the SEC this quickly, he had cover. And the cover was the announcement of their sale of their assets. So after that point, and that kind of an announcement, you have every right to purchase stock as a person of management.
All right. Well, sounds good to me. I don't know. Still stinks to high heaven.
Yeah, still stinks to high heaven.
Yeah, if you bought Snowflake at $20 or $2 or $1, yeah, right, sure. That's what stinks.
Yeah, that'd be true. Well, this is almost same thing.
When Mikey talks about the underwriter, you have to be have an account with the underwriter, and you call your broker up and say, oh, can you get me some of that Snowflake because I pay all my fees and I've been a Goldman Sachs player I can get you 500 shares, it's rotten. I'm telling you right now, folks, it's rotten to the core. It's wrong. It's unfair. And it should be equally shared. So that should be changed.
It could be, Shane, and I hope it is, but gosh, it's hard to say these days. Everything that people said couldn't be changed seems like it is being changed, but Wall Street is still very much Wall Street. And I'm not that optimistic. We've talked about cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin's having a bit of a moment again, which makes sense as gold is getting looked at, as rates are going down, as a store of wealth. There's some interest in it. It's got to move this immovable object of Wall Street in order to get there. Wall Street's not going to embrace it. And if they were, it would dilute the value of it in my mind as well.
And I agree. The problem with Bitcoin is that the principals in it that had between 2 and 3 million Bitcoins, as we all know, a little bit over a year ago, blew it into the market. And now the problem with Bitcoin, like so many other issues, is it's not tight. So it's going to take a huge amount of purchasing to drive the price again. And, because if you've got that much paper out or coins out there now, it's spread, a lot of people can now take a profit 2,000-3,000 instead of watching it go to 20,000 or 30,000. So, yeah, distribution is everything, baby. It's like I said today, Snowflake, 38 million shares, not or 36 million shares. Not a lot.
Yeah.
Play it just on that basis, baby. If you had bought Google at $89 when it came out,
it'd be all right, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Rating, where would you be today with an $89,000 investment? Yeah. 1,000 shares today, you'd be a millionaire.
That's for sure. Yeah. Craig says national debt, one word, Greece. Well, we're nowhere like Greece. Greece isn't the reserve currency of the world. And, Greece doesn't have the population we do. Greece doesn't have the economy we have and whatever. So, if you want to compare that apple with that orange, that's a losing argument. So just give it give that a rest. So anyway, James says, please, Craig, give us a break. So, okay. I'm with James. Yeah.
Greg, there's no way your president was even within 100 yards. And I mean, even if they were down, four offices down in one of the meeting rooms in the White House discussing the final deal, he had nothing to do with this. No way.
All right. So, any final thoughts on the market, Mike? Where are we going here? We've got an election coming up in about 46, 45 days, something like that. Is the market going to go on a tear before that? Are people going to start taking profit out of the market in anticipation of perhaps a Biden presidency? Are they going to put money in the market thinking Trump's going to win? What's the deal?
Well, we didn't get much in the way of another round of stimulus that hardly even makes the news on what the heck's going on with that. There are real concerns that happen to do with people that aren't getting their jobs back. The amount of time that's passed from when they were originally furloughed to now means they're laid off. And so there's real problems for a lot of people out there, and I don't want to be unsympathetic to them. But in this new economy that we're in, it's nice to have some free labor force. Inflation is, there's no signs of it anywhere. And there's no return on your cash. And so that is generally an okay environment for investors to go ahead and do what they want, which is if you put your money in a 0% CD, you're not losing too much on the opportunity, but your local real estate's going to get away from you. The stock market's going to get away from you. I hope you have big poker chips on both of those, because that's going to continue to go and continue to be dislocated from any historical valuation, which is something that's hard for me to say because I'm a value guy. I don't like paying too much for things, but that will persist in my mind. If we have a Biden win in the presidency, there'll be a big adjustment. That adjustment will probably be mitigated over the course of 2 years. Because as I've said, defending the case on this show is that everybody wants this economy. Nobody wants socialism. And everybody's going to say whatever it takes to get the votes that they think they need. So everybody could probably do a lot better by after they're done tuning in our show, logging off to social media until the next time we're on. We'll tell you what you need to know.
There you go. Well said, and absolutely accurate.
So here's my call. Real simple. Trump wins, and by the 20th of January, the Dow will blow through 30,000. Biden wins, you'll see tailing off when the Congress convenes, and by probably March or April of next year, depending on how real socialist they are, and how much capable Biden is managing or controlling the party and therefore the government, that determination will be made by the market. If they don't think he is and it's actually going left, like off the cliff left, the market will go off the cliff. Because how could you not see the market? You can't have a capitalist market in a socialist state. It doesn't exist anywhere in history. So,
and that's true, Shane, but that also includes not having government tell companies who has to buy who and for how much and taking commission on it. So there's irony that's happening.
I 100%. But I don't see that as a socialist thing. I know people do. I wish the government had taken a more active role because, we gave the solution for the third rail and Social Security, and that's owning public companies. And it's not a bad idea. You swap the $5.7 trillion that the Social Security has for preferred shares in five major companies that pay a 10% dividend and pays out the debt, funds Social Security forever, and we're happy campers. But, Bush tried to propose that back in his first term, and everybody took guns out from both sides. And, it was a circle squad firing. They were all shooting each other.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we're just about done for the day here. Craig says that liberals claim to want a hearing of other views. I guess, is that why they shout people down in restaurants and, grab their beer off their table and call them names and everything? I don't see Republicans taking to the street doing that, or Trump people.
No, there's idiots all across the world, so.
Yeah. Oh, it is, yeah. But, it seems to be prevalent on one side more than the other,
Depending on where you read your news, yes.
Well, that's certainly true.
Don't say that, Mike. That really, Mike, that so wrong. In so many ways, okay? That's no.
Well, I will venture back to the demonstrations back during the Vietnam War. I would have been a lot happier if all of the demonstrators had taken to the streets and telling North Vietnam to go home. That would have been a good deal for me.
Yeah. Amen.
But unfortunately, they just gave aid and comfort to the enemy that kept them going, that our own country was against us. So that's not good. So particularly when you get shot at. So other than that, it was fine. Weather was nice and warm. Anyway, so all right, guys, any final thoughts? Mike, how do they get a hold of you, son, if anybody wants to?
You can find me on the interweb is probably the best, but you can also call me on the telephone, 522-3201. Thanks for having me, guys. I really do enjoy it. I learned things. The Chinese digital currency move is something that I'm embarrassed I wasn't aware of, and I'm going to read up on that one a fair bit.
All right. Well, let's see. Tomorrow's Friday. We're not going to have a podcast tomorrow, guys, because I got to go see my surgeon in the morning to check out my hip, and the wife's got something in the afternoon. So we will see everybody Saturday on the radio. So I'll post
talk with everybody because they can't see us, only on our podcast.
What are you talking about?
You said you'll see you on Saturday, but we'll talk to you on Saturday morning.
We'll talk to you on Saturday morning. Yeah. Yeah. So that'll be good. That'll be fun. I think
it's all fun.
Yeah. It's something. All right. Say goodbye, Mike.
Hey, goodbye.
All right.
All right. Take care. We'll see you Saturday morning. And no, we won't, but we will talk. Tom and I'll see you on our Saturday morning, but we'll talk to you.
Yeah, we'll talk to you Saturday morning. And don't you have some other things to say, Shane?
Be happy, be safe, live in the moment, live to work. And God bless the American and Canadian people. And thank goodness we all live in the two greatest country clubs in the world.
That's right. And hey, all views are welcome here, as our comments clearly indicate. And hey, as we always say, Mike, Shane, me, if you think it there, there's a good chance we'll say it here. So we'll see everybody next Monday at 9 a.m.